based approach to representative government. What I'd like to see them do is an additive approach. We have neighborhood associations. Let's continue to use what has been a very good thing for Portland and then create avenues for additional engagement with these other organizations. So we don't have to cut one out to create opportunities for the other.
Right.
We should be able to create opportunities for everyone. What I think makes the neighborhood association special, well, one of the things, is that we are a geography-based organization, that everyone who lives in that area gets to participate. With identity groups, special interest groups, it's not as straightforward that they are really there for everyone. They are there to represent a particular group,
mm-hmm.
whereas we exist to represent everyone and encourage.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is now 6 o'clock, and up next is Right to Survive.
Affairs Director, and an Evening News and Public Affairs Director. The deadline to apply for these three full-time positions has been extended to July 18th by 11:59 p.m. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. For more information on these positions and how to apply, just go to kboo.fm/employment today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Coley Neighborhood Farmers Market. This is a weekly event at 5011 Northeast 42nd Avenue at Alberta Street in Portland. The market features local farmers and businesses, and this Thursday, July 11th, there will also be face painting and music by Pete Krebs. Again, that's the Coley Neighborhood Farmers Market, Thursday, July 11th, from 4 to 8 p.m. at 5011 Northeast 42nd Avenue at Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another Right to Survive radio show on KBOO 90.7 FM. And if you want to call in and ask questions or give a comment, today's show is 503-231-8187. Our show today is the street response, and we're still waiting for Kaya Sands and Devin from Street Roots and Vince from a houseless community, and we have Corey with us right now. So we're going to go on with our show. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak, your co-host, and
welcome everybody. I'm Lisa Fay. Sorry, I'm suffering a little cold. I'm excited to be here tonight, and I hope we will get some callers tonight. We're talking about the pilot project that will be rolled out in January for Portland Street Response.
And go ahead.
It is, the idea has come from the Cahoots model and Whitebird out of Eugene that has been operating for a number of years, that people can call in the event of a crisis or if they need some medical attention where the police do not have to have interaction or be involved. For many of the houseless community, this is often a safer, more less threatening approach to having calling the cops. And just like people who live in homes that need emergency assistance, they will have options now where the police will not be the first responders to people's neighborhoods or doors.
So our guest had just arrived right on time. And so we're going to do an introduction, and then we're going to go on with our show.
Hi, I'm Kaya Sand. I'm Executive Director of Street Roots and long history with Right to Survive, and really happy to be back on the air with you.
And of course, I'm Corey Ilya, revisiting from last month. I'm glad to be here. Journalist, photographer, documentarian.
And who's our other guest? She's so shy.
We have a guest in studio who's not on air.
Welcome anyway. Thank you. Well, welcome, Kaya and Corey. It's good to have you back in our studio again. I was touching base just a little bit about the, which is still now a concept, the Portland Street Response. However, the intent is in January it will be rolled out as a pilot project.
That's right. So right now the city, Mayor Wheeler put $500,000 in the city budget to develop a pilot program. And Commissioner Hardesty, in collaboration with the mayor's office, is leading the pilot project design. And she's really emphasizing getting a lot of feedback from people who are houseless. But it's a fairly rapid design process. So it's over the next few months with the idea to present a design for the Portland Street Response in November to City Council.
And Street Roots is spearheading this, am I correct?
From the public angle.
We our reporter Emily Green really listened to the fact that I feel like people all over this city have been talking about this. I've heard from you all. I've heard just all over the place where people are saying we need an alternative to the police when the crisis is not a crime. And so Emily Green in for our March 15th issue released a plan that really just drew out how this could happen.
And Corey, I'm going to talk with Kyla, but I'm not forgetting about you.
No worries.
Just wanted to say your name so you can be
welcome. It's good to have Corey on air, too.
So, Kyla, what feedback, positive and negative, have you been getting from both house and unhoused and different organizations, grassroots and traditional services?
And after the plan was released?
Yes.
Yeah. Just this Monday, we were at a listening session at Sisters of the Road. Mm-hmm. I think there were about maybe 40, 50 people there. A lot of folks who had experienced or are currently experiencing homelessness. Plenty of dogs in the house, too. One that was snoring at the feet of Commissioner Hardesty. And that was really, I think, powerful, because I would say to a person, everyone there testified that they are not satisfied with the first responder situation that emphasizes police going out and over-policing unhoused people. Just to back up for a second, the Willamette Week had an article in February that with our 911 system, every 15 minutes, someone reports a so-called unwanted person to 911. Every 15 minutes, and that term unwanted person is just so brutal and horrible. Okay, so...
I know, because one of our researchers, Katie McKinley Block and Julia McKinley, they did a research on a 911 call, and 53% of the people arrested on 911 call were houseless people, and 75% was caused on houseless people just walking through or sitting, no crime committed. And so they trying to lessen those calls so police can take care of the real crime.
Right, including when houseless folks call the police to actually report crimes on them because they're disproportionately the victims of crimes. I would say at Sisters, one of the things I think we all heard is just that concern that first responders aren't even understanding what they're, the like culture that they're walking up to, mm-hmm. and that, you know, especially I think a number of folks who are transgender community members were talking about really struggling with being mm-hmm. understood, and people are talking about, you know, their pets, their belongings, mm-hmm. and their partners, their families, that they couldn't leave anyone and anything and just be dragged away, mm-hmm. and that first responders, police weren't necessarily understanding that when they're walking up, so it you know, they're perpetrating more violence by even removing people from their mm-hmm. communities and not really understanding that oftentimes unhoused people are providing their own security, mm-hmm. and so actually they're just disrupting what's secure.
Okay, we have a call on the phone. 911 is not the call to make, the number to dial, but 503-231-8187. Okay, caller, state your purpose.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
This is Edie, who loves you dearly.
Hey,
and we love you too, Edie.
I want to say that I passionately, enthusiastically endorse, support the compassionate, because it is good for everyone. It's good for taxpayers. We get better value for the dollar. It's good for the house owners who hate houseless people, much to their problem with their own soul, because it helps them have a safer environment, a cleaner environment, better values, and a stronger sense of community. And they'll have more people who are housed and unhoused who will be able to be aware of and care for each other and have a stronger sense of community protecting each other. I am for it because it helps our soul to be better human beings and to connect. And I would like us to also supplement it by having us pay people who are very experienced with being unhoused teach the rest of us what we're going to need between the earthquakes and methane fire explosions, you know, gas lines, that we're going to be needing their expertise on survival with other people, with the weather, with being resilient, by being courageous, with self-health care. I would want us to also supplement this by having folks like Rose Hip Medic Collective being paid very well to do the excellent 20-hour street medic training and expand it to community medic training. I also like us having the compassionate response because it's better for the environment, the other living organisms, to not have the police trashing, destroying, and poisoning the place. It's better for a democracy because we are wasting most of our city tax dollars on terrorism by uniformed officers, and we could better use that money for our water, for our air, for our parks, for community. I would also like us to have houseless people better represented by requirement in the neighborhood associations as well. So we strengthen our neighborhood associations and have representation from folks who are unhoused, as well as on different councils and committees. I don't mean like the one token person that's overvoted and doesn't mean anything. I mean respectfully having the submission of those ideas, you know, seriously considered and funded. And I also would like us to have houses community members talking about how we can create, and how we must have mandated through so many people in a certain location that we have to have so much square foot of open space. But when those, and if they are going to have high rises, then we have to have a bigger open grassy space for when those buildings crash and fall. They're going to spread out a long ways, and we're not going to have enough space for our internal refugees.
That's good. So Edie, do you think the house people, how long can we convert this not calling 911 on houseless people? And by you being a house person, Huh?
We have to do that right away. We have to, through every means of media, social, commercial, et cetera, we have to, every way, train people to see that we're human. We're, God has brought us into each other's lives mm-hmm. to make us better people. When I see someone who is currently not housed, that's a call to me to be a better me by being more humble, more caring, more compassionate, more fair, more honest, more courageous. That's calling me to be a better me. And that being a better me is not looking down on someone, but to change the system that oppresses all of us. So
exactly.
We no longer have a vested interest in having the visibly suffering. So it raises tax dollars by raising artificially rent and mortgages because people are so terrified, I don't want to be like them, that we all go down the hill, down the drain economically for a few people, poverty pimps, making money off of hurting people, houses, and turning us against each other. Instead of us being against each other, we need to be united for our common good, for the environment, for clean air, for water, for getting ready to raise when the sea level raises and it's going to be flooding Portland. We need to be working together.
Uh-oh, we asked you a loaded question. You got a lot of answers. So we'll have to get back, I guess. And we thank you, Edie. 503-231-8187 is the number to call, and not 911. This is Right to Survive Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial, where the uncomfortable are made comfortable. Now we want to go to you, Corey, as you being a houseless person. What do you see in this new venture instead of calling 911? Street response that Street Roots is working on?
I used to be homeless myself up there on the Springwater Corridor. When I was around there, I essentially kind of was running security for camp, and I got used to the interactions with officers, and it was not the best. A lot of people are on edge when they're camped out and they have an officer approaching them and trying to figure out what's going on. It can be very stressful, anxiety inducing. With Street Response, I think it's actually a really beautiful system to try and actually have somebody that's like a peer, somebody who's been through it, somebody who's an advocate, to be able to actually get down to the situation and understand it a little bit better and be able to handle it a little bit better. Because when you have an officer there, he's there thinking it's an emergency, thinking that it's life or death. They're there to protect and serve.
Well, who are they protecting and serving?
They're supposed to be protecting the regular citizens, but I guess ED was still on the line. A lot of the homeless that I've interacted with don't feel that the officers actually have their best interest vested when they're visiting the camps and answering those calls. They more or less feel that they're getting treated less than human when they're dealing with these interactions.
Yeah, let's talk about traumatization, where when we all know that lately the when the police want a vacation, they shoot or kill somebody and they get paid leave and they have that vacation and shit. I mean stuff. So when the police come and they come, you know, holding their guns, sticking their chest out, and this somebody have a mental breakdown or somebody that's real sick and need to go rush to the hospital, people get traumatized. And in your experience, Lisa or Corey, you haven't been homeless yet. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what have y'all witnessed when they come? Because I can tell a story, but I want the listeners to hear from you all instead of me.
I have many stories of my own, but I'd actually like to share one that a friend was just sharing with me the other day. Mm-hmm. She had an interaction, and so she had to call an officer. And when the officer showed up, he instantly took her as the one that was committing any kind of a crime mm-hmm. because she was not housed at the moment. And that happens quite often. It could be very traumatizing.
Yeah, I know when I was sleeping by the bakery on France, by St. Francis, I guess it was a frat house having a party, and their theme was, while we were asleep on the sidewalk, they would throw their beer bottles while the glass splashed in our face and stuff, and they would throw sticks, and they put this one guy's eye socket. So we called the police, and we were the one that got arrested and not them. So That's one of millions of stories I can tell.
Other stories that are very prevalent is just calling the dispatch center, whether it's the 911 or it's the non-emergency number that they have you call. And people are going through a crisis or they need medical attention. They don't need a police officer to come out. And they don't need to be given 20 questions about their state of mental health where it's all leading questions that's trying to lead them to say they're suicidal or they're going to harm somebody else when they just really need to have an interaction with somebody who they can feel safe confiding in their depression or their events that have led them to a space where they're calling, asking for some type of help. And so seeing over and over again the hearing the misleading questions, they're trying to make them suicidal so they can send aggressive officers in with guns to hold them off for mental health evaluations and holds is not something that the people on the street want to see over and over and over again. So I see a lot of skepticism coming from people I've talked to. However, there's also a nice chunk of houseless people out there that are open to the idea of having someone other than police coming to assist them. Have a few questions too.
Mm-hmm. It's 20 after the hour and we're going to go for a small music break and come back with our guest. 503-231-8187 is the number to call.
Brought to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM. Right before the break, we had given the number to call in if you would like to talk a little bit on air with us about the Portland Street Response, the pilot project that will be coming in January. If you have any ideas or suggestions, or if you have heard something or someone has, or yourself has been impacted by interactions by other street response programs in other cities, mm-hmm. or police interaction and you would like to say something, our number is 503-231-8187.
So, Kaya, can you tell us how this new concept arrived?
Yeah, I think it definitely feels like something, as I mentioned before, that so many people have been thinking about and mm-hmm. talking about. The Eugene model provides a kind of foundation for us to build
from. And what's
from.
The name of that?
And that's called CAHOOTS. Okay. And CAHOOTS came out of the Whitebird Clinic, which has been around since, I believe, the 1960s. It really emerged out of the country fair and sort of alternative, you know, approaches to medical crises. And in the 30 years ago, actually, the Eugene police approached Whitebird to see if they could operate mobile outreach that would be an alternative to the police. So how it works in Eugene is they have these teams of two. One is a medic and one's a crisis worker. They go around in a van with a bird on it. Mm-hmm. They've got like hoodies on, so mm-hmm. a little bit less of the badged uniform. And they get the 911 dispatch in their ear. They mm-hmm. actually get the police calls too. And the dispatcher is shunting calls to the police or to CAHOOTS. Mm-hmm. sometimes to both. And what they're getting is a lot of those calls that are the so-called, again, I just hate saying that term, but the unwanted person calls, mm-hmm. the trespass, you know, the public disturbance, as well as maybe the welfare checks. So removing the police from those calls. And I did a ride-along with them, and I thought it actually was really helpful. One of the things I was really struck by is that they're able to offer transport. So, you know, one call, for instance, was someone was having, you know, they were loud by a convenience store. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine how this goes down if the police are called. But because Cahoots came, they are able to just listen. They talked about how their model is to try to hear the story beneath the story. Mm-hmm. So they listened and they learned this man had an untreated wound. Okay. So they cleaned the wound. And then they learned that he actually was really agitated because he had a cancer appointment that he mm-hmm. couldn't get to. So that's where the transport really mattered, because they basically could stitch it together, right? They could just drive him to the cancer clinic. Pretty simple. Mm-hmm. But often that's just, you know, totally just something that's not even possible to have happen for someone. So that's just one example, and there were many. I mean, another, just to give a super quick one, was like the fraternity row in Eugene. A housed person called because it was an unhoused person sleeping in the alley. Again, could very much imagine this happening in Portland. And one of the things Cahoots did is they actually called the housed person and they de-escalated that person, which was very interesting.
Nice.
So I want to know, to all our KBOO listeners and people who just not listening KBOO or wanting to listen to KBOO, what crime is a person committing while they sleep? Mm-hmm. So, Corey, back to you. Why do you think the police get called when they see houseless people or going through any kind of trauma impact or want some type of justice done that's been unjust to them? I know, for instance, this woman got attacked and taken advantage of, and she was houseless. She called the police. And because of her social status, the police asked her, "Are you sure you wasn't trying to do sex for drugs, or you wasn't do this?" But I wonder if she would have been housed, would the same type of questioning would have happened? And in your experience, Corey, from, I know Springwater Quarter was dumped as the bad, bad, bad houseless people.
It so, was.
Yeah.
Yeah, just living on the Springwater Corridor, everybody kind of looked at most of the homeless, especially myself, out there as just plain drug addicts, criminals, thieves. You know, and I just want to say, in any society, there's always going to be an element of crime.
Exactly.
Regardless of, even if you want to declare it a utopia, there's still going to be some form of crime in there. Crime is subjective to whatever state of society you're in. But yeah, the interactions once officers show up on the trail, once any of the neighbors are out there, it's very negative. They instantly just think of the people out there as criminals, thieves, drug addicts, and don't want to even give them the chance to even speak about what's been going on in their life, their truth, you know? Yeah. They never really even get a chance to speak their side. Sometimes when there's officers that come out there, I know there's like one good officer out there in the Springwater area now that actually takes time to talk and actually figure out what's going on. But I mean, those kind of officers throughout the city are kind of rare and far apart anymore.
So what 911 is really saying that only housed people can have crisis moments. Only housed people need to be dealt with when they have a mental breakdown or something happened to their family and they crying and feeling bad. So the police come out and interview them and find, you got a warrant. We're going to take you to jail no matter what your mental status is at that time. And this is what Street Respond trying to alleviate, Kai?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's so striking, right, is that every time someone has an arrest, a conviction, they just get that much further from employment and housing, right? It just, we're making mm-hmm. it harder and harder. We're driving people further and further into poverty mm-hmm. and marginalization. So, you know, just thinking about recently a woman that I know that, you know, she got trespassed from a park. She was taken to jail. This was at night. They took her belongings, and then she was released at midnight without belongings as a woman. Mm-hmm. So she didn't have any way to sleep, so she had to wander. And then the next morning, she was supposed to show up for a court date, and she knew she already had this whole pile of things behind her. And so she was afraid, and she wasn't going to show up for that court date. So then that was going to be one more problem.
Exactly.
And then the warrants pile up. You know, it just gets harder and harder, and she gets more and more beaten down with it all. She didn't have, you know, she never possessed. I mean, it just, it becomes absurd. It becomes absolutely absurd and cruel. I mean, we have such an extreme system in this country of extreme wealth and extreme poverty, and people are just punished for being poor.
503-231-8187 is the number to call.
So with this model, and you said White Bird
mm-hmm.
was originally involved in Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's some activist outreach workers here in Portland that come from White Bird. Has anyone reached out to them here in the city?
Oh, to people in the city who worked at White Bird?
Mm-hmm.
I come across some folks who have experience with Cahoots and White Bird, but I don't know in particular. Who are you thinking of, some specific?
Yes.
I
don't want to call them out
on the
radio.
Okay, so
I do know that they just recently had a large retreat last month, so.
I happen to know a couple of the people you're talking about. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
I think as being first responders and doing outreach, many of them have done outreach along the Springwater and East Portland for a number of years, and having medical backgrounds. I think they would be good people too.
Are you talking about Ree Campbell?
Don't call anyone out.
I love you, well, Ree.
we have a lot of talent in this city. I think it's really important that we figure out how to design something that works for Portland and that's big enough, you know, that our city is willing to pour resources into this, so we don't approach this with this kind of scarcity mentality. We make sure that it can succeed.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So it's half past the hour, and we're going to take another music break, 503-231-8187. And when we come back, we're going to see who's on what organization is helping to start this new campaign off.
Welcome back to another episode of Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm here in studio with my co-host Ibrahim Mubarak and our guests Corey and Kaya. And they have been working a little bit on, one more than the other, but they've both been working on the Portland Street Response. And I know there's a bunch of listening sessions that have started to take place that will take place over the course of July. And then some more design and definite planning will start in August, am I correct? And then we will go on from there and have a concrete proposal in the fall and hopefully a launch come January.
A launch.
Well,
a lounge or a lunch?
Launch.
Okay.
A launch.
We all have lunch.
Wouldn't mind a little lunch, would, too.
Yeah, sushi you,
well,
more.
Maybe the city can promote it as a big event in yeah. one of the yeah. city parks and have
I
lunch for
hungry.
People.
Yeah.
To get to know the the response. Now, we know Commissioner Hardesty has been a longtime advocate for police reform and separation of police and trauma response, especially with the number of shootings and deaths at the hands of police, that if other responders had come to the scene, probably those people would be alive now. So besides her office and some people within the fire bureau, there's people from ASU working on it. PSU, I'm sorry.
Your Arizona roots.
I know. Could you talk a little bit about who else is involved and some of the grassroots organizations that are also...
Yeah. I mean, I think we have this really great history here of some organizations working together, especially because of the Western Regional Advocacy Project that brings together Right to Survive, Sisters of the Road, Street Roots, ACLU. Mm-hmm. So drawing on that history, which you can talk more about in terms of going out and surveying folks on the streets to get to drive the process, the ideas of people who are living on the streets. Based on that, we're building a process of going out and surveying people on the Portland street response. Mm-hmm. So Right to Survive is going to help train teams next week. We're going to, at Street Roots, have on Tuesday and Thursday trainings that Ibrahim is going to be involved with, as well as Yellow Brick Road. They're going to come out and help. And the folks who are going to do the surveying will be Street Roots vendors, Sisters of the Road, roadies, folks from Street Books, Right to Survive members. Yes. And then Portland State is sending out students as part of their homelessness research
and Action Collaborative.
Action Collaborative. Thank you. I always have to pause. I'm like, advocacy action. Yeah. They're going to send them out. Are you working on that?
Actually, I've been just talking recently with the HREC. I was actually one of the first people to report on that situation developing over at PSU, the Homeless Research and Action Collaborative, and the Center for Homeless Cities, or for Future Cities. I'm really adamant about trying to get in on this project and trying to help a little bit, because I've been kind of just watching it all develop from the outside and kind of following the whole Portland Street Response building up and everything that's been going on with Right to Survive and RAP and Sisters of the Road. I definitely want to get involved with it. I'm just not sure to what capacity at this moment.
Come out on Tuesday.
503-231-8187. Okay, call us. State your biz.
Yeah.
What's your name? Caller, are you
Hi,
there?
I'm April.
Hi, April.
Hey, April.
April. Hi.
April Showers.
I just had a question about what teens, or more like specifically youth, can do in the community to help.
Exactly. Good question. Kaya, you're
on. Well, I mean, I think that the teens in our community give me the most hope. You all are the ones that are leading climate justice, gun control, all kinds of things. So I think, you know, having a strong voice in this process, letting the folks at City Hall know that we don't want an over-policed city, that we want a city in which, you know, we can even redefine the idea of what public safety is. The concept itself doesn't have to be this violent system. It can actually be about the public, about the commons, about, you know, all the people having a level of safety and stability.
Yeah, definitely. That's great.
So one of the things I've always noticed with younger generations is the fact that with the older generation's typical response to homelessness being kind of withdrawn, that some of the younger generations also follow that, but also I kind of think that it needs to be the opposite. You guys need to be able to embrace the situation and try and figure out what's going on with it more, and trying to actually be more and more compassionate. And I mean, it's only going to be able to happen generational by generational to be able to get yourself to an actual point of being able to understand the situation and being able to help with it. Yeah.
I love that, Corey. You know, I was just thinking about the younger generation with all of these different things, whether it's climate, global heating, I guess is what the Guardian's calling it, global warming, you know, saying that's not normal, that's not okay. And that the same thing with extreme disparities between wealth and poverty, that the generation of teenagers can be, you know, can say, we're not going to accept that as okay. We want a different society.
Children are the future.
Yeah.
I also think that another way, if what time is the training on Tuesday and Thursday?
It's at 1:30 on Tuesday and it's at 9 a.m. on Thursday.
And
okay.
Can the teens come out and participate if they would like to?
Well, that's interesting.
To learn more?
Yes, I would think so. And you all can come to Right to Survive meeting. That's the second and fourth Thursday of the month. The second Thursday is at Join from 5 to 7, and the fourth Thursday at Sister LaRose, same time, 5 to 7. You can go to Street Roots and talk to Kaya, and you can also go to Sisters of LaRose and ask for Danielle or Ben Dolan.
And the reason I suggest you possibly coming out to one of the sessions on either Tuesday or Thursday, that way you would get a little bit of education and training about what the program is going to entail and look like, as well as maybe some ways that you can find resources to correspond with, so that maybe there's someone next year in one of your classes or at stations at the office, your school's office or the nurse's office, community room, where signs or posters with information could be placed. And you could be the advocate liaison for the youth of your school.
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked that, because it's the hidden houseless people that go to school and they don't want people to know, because they may get teased, and maybe you can advocate for houseless school children also.
That's a really good point.
Definitely. I mean,
the Beaverton School District now has the most homeless students of any district in our state, and you just think about all the people living, you know, couch to couch or in cars or shelters, and they're just trying to, you know, take an exam the next day.
And I can state that it's in every school system, even in some of the colleges like PSU and some of the other ones here in town, that there are students that are dealing with that situation. And just by the sheer fact of how much pride they take in themselves and trying to keep an image of what they are, that they aren't willing to admit that they are going through that.
And that's trauma within themselves, dealing with living on the streets, how they get a shower, how do they have clean clothes, how the embarrassment of going to school and seeing those peers. So perhaps you can come to these trainings and learn how to disassemble trauma impact school children. 503-231-8187.
April, could you tell we're a little bit enthusiastic about your question?
I love it.
And maybe we can do a whole show on houseless school children one day.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Kaya, can you tell us the process and how are we coming about these questions for this survey to give the houseless community, get feedback from them? Because what we do at RAP, what the community says, what the houses or Street Roots Sisters and Right to Buy, we do what the community say. So how's this process going?
Yeah, so we're working on a survey with the PSU folks and Right to Survive. We were meeting today to just start to think about what information the city needs to get back. So, you know, what experiences do people have people already had with first responders that they need to describe, or specifically with police? How do they want people to show up? I think about one man who's a street vendor and he struggles with schizophrenia, and he can be, you know, really loud out there in the streets when his head is hurting too bad, you know, with voices. And he told me, well, I might look frightening in those moments, but what I need is a soothing voice. I need someone to speak to me with a really soothing voice. Well, we need to have people who are on that end of the crisis be able to describe what they need, how they need first responders to show up, what should the first responders be wearing, what kind of resources should the first responders have. So that's what the survey is about, to try to figure out the clear questions to ask to get the information to get right back to city council.
So in the next couple of weeks, how many is the city anticipating, like, a minimal amount of surveys that are to come in, or anything like that?
Well, we're going to try. So there's the listening session at Sisters of the Road. There's going to be a listening session on Saturday and from 9:30 to 11 at Join with Commissioner Hardesty. So that's another way to get a lot of voices in. I do want to emphasize that these listening sessions are really focused on people speaking who are houseless or have experienced houselessness, just to make sure that those are the voices that get heard the most right now. And then when we go out next week, let's see how many people we can get out there and how much ground we can cover. Maybe Corey, we can get you out there too.
Well, we got 15 minutes left. We're going to take another music break. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You have any questions or suggestions, or just want to say you're listening to us, please do it. Okay, 503-231-8187, the number call. You listen to Right to Survive on KBOO 90.7. And our subject and topic is street response. I want to give a shout out to Ani Haynes. Where are you, Ani? When are you coming back? We love you. Ani, Ani, Ani. Okay, I did my lobby. Okay, Corey, we got more questions. Have you been talking with the houseless community, and if so, what are their response to this? Because I know some was still traumatized because the police come and they get questioned and then they go to jail, or when they get taken to the hospital, they can't take their belongings. And what about their pets they leaving, or if they want their friend to come with them because they feel comfortable? Like, when I go to the hospital, I have to have my wife to hold my hand because I have phobia of needles. Mm-hmm. And they may not be listening to that. So what are you hearing in the streets, Corey?
So there are certain little patches of the homeless community throughout the city, like out there in Springwater and even over on St. John's, that really haven't heard about the street response quite yet. And so I've been kind of explaining it to them when I'm running into them and they're asking what it's about. A lot of them are very optimistic about it because they are just tired of trying to interact with the officers when they are feeling they are not getting listened to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of hostility pretty much between the interactions of the homeless and the houseless and the officers that interact with them. It's very negative. They so, just wanted change.
So do you think they would be calling, or are they just going to keep to themselves the way they've been doing? Because I know at Pitcher Tent, we had a situation where somebody got hurt and we had a medic on. But then that person, because they didn't know that medic, wanted a street family to help them out. And they knew exactly what that person was going through because they've been through it before. And I know when the police come down, stand back, we got this taken care of. Yeah.
I mean, that's another aspect that needs to be explored as well. And that's kind of why myself as a journalist, having been homeless and having the relationships with some of the homeless out there on the streets in like the Springwater area and out there in St. John's, they already know me. So I can get access to interviews because of the fact they know that my character and what I'm about. A lot of them probably wouldn't be down for interacting with new people coming in, social workers, strangers they haven't really met. They more probably would be willing to interact with people that have lived their situation and got themselves off the street, back housed, and have been trying to figure out their own life out. I myself, when I started going to PSU in 2018, I was getting to, or 2017, excuse me, I was getting to a point where I was starting to miss the people that I used to live with out on the trail because I considered them my family, my community. I had been housed for 4 years, and at that point I decided to go volunteer at Clackamas Service Center because that was the service center that was serving most of the homeless I knew out there on the Springwater Trail, my family, my community. And I've been slowly just working there. I just recently separated from them so that I could actually cover them for a documentary because I really appreciate the work they do, and I just didn't want to break ethical code for journalistic reasons. But, yeah. It's just, yeah. Sorry, I lost my train of thought there.
That's but, okay.
yeah, a lot of those people that come out there when I was volunteering there, I was working in the clothing room at Clackamas Service Center.
So do you think the houseless community would use this new concept, street response?
That's a hard one to really reach into because some of them are probably going to be a little standoffish about trying to interact with it because they have been burnt so many times with so many services, and they're probably going to look at it and be like, okay, is this just another one of those services that's going to burn me, or should I even take a chance with it?
It's powerful the way you're describing that, just like, who do you trust, who do you feel safe with?
And right now a lot of houseless people are not trusting going to the hospital because a lot of them are getting arrested because they're there and they're being screened and they've been taken to jail for trespassing because they don't want to go back out. They're not healed yet. Or after a sweep, it's cold out. They want to get seen and the emergency room is overcrowded. So how can we make this where everybody feel comfortable to get the proper services to deal with their medical and mental state?
Well, at least I think we have to have better options. I mean, I think about like some of the people that are calling 911. There's at least some people in there that would want a better option. And thinking about the people in the hospitals, so Disability Rights Oregon just released a report where they looked at 2017-2018 area hospitals, and I think it was just over 70%, and 70% of all of the trespass arrests in emergency departments were people who are unhoused. There's this one description where the woman was upset. She just wanted a breakfast burrito that someone promised her, you know, or other people said, I just don't want to go out to this on the streets. So our option is take people to jail. That's our way to house people.
We promise them a burrito and now we're not going to give it to them and they won't leave.
So you get your burrito in jail.
Exactly. That's a much more like inhumane and and expensive approach.
Well, I don't know. Some jails across the country give you green bologna.
That's in Arizona. Yeah. Going back to Arizona. That's another country.
With the pilot program rolling out in January, and hopefully this will become a program that is well-funded by the city of Portland, on an ongoing basis. How are we going to get the word out to the houseless community when it launches? And how, and you know, because if you're living unhoused, you're not walking around with a TV set that can be plugged in. Earth friendly, just stick it in the ground and it lights up. That don't work that way. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't have radios. A lot of people, their only source of communication is either interacting with other houseless people, stopping in someplace for food or clothing, some type of service. And then there's some people that, like Corey said, has been burned so many times, they're very skeptical about reaching out to anybody. So how are we going to get this information that there is this program?
And second part of that question, how are we going to present this to house people so they wouldn't call 911 right. also? You got two questions.
I was just going to say I'd like to volunteer to help get the word out on Springwater Corridor because I'm familiar with the area and a lot of people seem to be very scared of it.
I think that's the way we get it out, right? Mm-hmm. Right to survive, being involved, yeah. all of that, boots to the pavement.
Right. And who would get this out to the house community also? I think that's the most important thing. One of the most important is making sure the house community are in on this so they won't call 911, they can call street response.
Yeah, I think that's so important, and that's something where, you know, I think it's important for me as a housed person to just to claim that identity and to realize then from that vantage point that I have to be speaking to other people who are housed and making sure that the word gets out. I've been speaking to a number of neighborhood association and their safety and livability committees. And, you know, if you just present things as the common sense facts that they are, there are, I think, a number of people that don't, that would like to have a better option, especially if maybe you steer them that way. And so I think we can get a lot of support. There's people all across the city who want better options. They know that the system's broken, and they know that we can't just do this kind of piecemeal patchwork where we just keep trying to get things to fit. We have to actually overturn a system that doesn't work and create something new.
But with all the shelters and providers being closed down, like Sunshine Division, that shelter got closed down. St. Andrews downtown been told they can't wash feet anymore because it's against
health code
or something like
so
that.
So meanwhile, people's feet just have to get more exactly, infected.
Exactly. Yeah. And so you got infected feet and they call first respond.
Right.
I mean, they're going to be thinking, you know, my feet is infected. It may get cut off. I can't call first response because the police come and I did a crime, didn't show up for court 5 years ago for criminal trespass. They're going to throw me in jail with infected feet.
And there are too many people who are houseless who have amputated limbs.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to stop them from cutting on us.
No more guinea pigs. Yeah. We don't want to be the guinea pigs.
So we have 3 minutes left, 503-231-8187. You better come call now or call us next month.
Ibrahim, can you tell us what happens tomorrow night with Right to Survive?
Tomorrow night we have a meeting at Join on 81st Street from 5 to 7. And we're going to be talking about the Central East Side Compassionate Change District and what's happening there. So you want to come in and be informed on what's happening with this collaboration of housed and unhoused people in the Central East Side community, industrial community. And we're going to talk more about street response on how we can get these surveys out and how you can participate in helping our houseless community. And then since we have 2 minutes left, any last words from
Kaya, can you tell us what happened Saturday? With the street
yes,
response?
And so on Saturday at Join from 9:30 to 11, Commissioner Joanne Hardesty is going to conduct a listening session with people who are houseless or formerly houseless. Mm-hmm. And I also just wanted to say, yes, I really encourage people, if you do want to get involved and figure out ways to have direct action, and if you're houseless or if you're in solidarity with people who are houseless, turn out for Right to Survive. That is an excellent way to get involved and have a real impact in this city.
Any last words, Corey?
Thank you for listening.
Those was really easy last words. We have a guest also in the studio. Yeah. She's so shy. Do you want to say anything?
Nope.
She's shaking. No, she can't even say no. She's shy. She's shaking her head. Go ahead.
Thank you to our guests, and thank you to our listening audience
and
our callers. Yeah. I would like to sign off tonight by reminding everyone to be kind to one another.
Mm. Especially see a houseless person. We didn't ask to be this way. They didn't teach us how to live in the streets. They taught us how to live inside. So be aware that we in no person's land, trying to do the best we can to survive. Thank you for listening to another Right to Survive show on KBOO 90.7 FM.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. It is 7 o'clock, and up next is Hard Knock Radio.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll host a screening of Motherlode, Thursday, July 11th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. Motherlode is a crowdsourced documentary about a new mom's quest to understand and promote the cargo bike movement in a gas-powered, digital, and divided world. This film explores the themes of movement building, activism, and courage to go against the grain. Again, that's the screening of Motherlode, Thursday, July 11th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm, on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Big Float,